This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome to Health and Living with me, T. Shao Yik. Today is another episode of our mini-series discussing ethics in healthcare. And today we're looking at ethical issues in digital health. And of course, digital technologies have consumed our lives in almost every facet of life, from entertainment to education. And of course, will continue to play an increasingly important role in healthcare as well. However, the use of digital tech, as exciting and promising as it may be when it comes to various areas of healthcare, including diagnosis, treatment, consultations, and consumer health, is not without its issues and challenges, especially in ethical issues. So that's what I hope to explore today with my guests who are joining me via digital platform Zoom, Associate Professor Dr. Julia Patrick Ankasan and Associate Professor Dr. Pang Yong Kek, both from the Faculty of Medicine, University of Malaya. How are the both of you today?
I'm good, thank you. I'm happy to be on the show.
Yeah, I'm okay as well.
Thank you so much for your time. So I think we do need to start with making sure that we are all on the same page and we understand what are the basic terms, at least. What we mean by digital health is such a broad term.
Yeah, I think now I think digital health is becoming a very common term. But exactly what is digital health? So in the broad term, I think we can refer to digital health as any digital technology used to deliver or improve healthcare. So this terminology will encompass the software, the hardware, and the electronic connections. I'd like to give some example. The software will include like the mobile apps that we use quite commonly these days, the text messages, websites, emails, social platforms, telemedicine, you name it. On the other hand, the hardware will include the computer, mobile phones, medical devices, and the wearables, such as the smartwatch, the Fitbit, and the connection technology will include the wired, the wireless, the Wi-Fi connections, and the Bluetooth technology.
All right. And, you know, I think what interests and excites a lot of people is when we think of the futuristic potential of using technology in healthcare. And of course, the term artificial intelligence or AI always comes to mind. Where would you see that fitting into what we're talking about today?
When the term actually was coined, I think in 1956, that was actually a long time ago. So what is artificial? Artificial, of course, the opposite is natural intelligence. We know that in the past, we often believe that only living creatures have the capability to think and to analyze. And that is actually part of what we call the intelligence. Artificial intelligence, on the other hand, is referring to the non-living objects, which is the machine. Okay, and hence, when we talk about artificial intelligence, we are talking about machine intelligence, something that is created by a human being.
All right. What broadly, Dr. Julia, would be the ethical areas that you think we should keep an eye on when we talk about digital tech in healthcare? Because I think the advantages and the benefits are what come to mind first for people, right? We think about how it brings convenience to our lives. We think of how it should improve the delivery and even the outcome of healthcare services. But, you know, embedded in all that, what are the broad ethical issues that you'd like to point out first?
For me, right, so there are two main things. One is privacy and confidentiality and security breaches. Okay, there are also talk on whether the implementation is ethical in terms of whether everybody can have access to it, as well as the data accuracy that is mainly in AI, you know, how accurate it is AI. So the first two, right, for example, privacy and confidentiality, a lot of information being stored in any electronic system. And, you know, this has always been, for example, people talk about security breaches of Facebook and all the other social media. The same can occur in healthcare, digital healthcare. And it can lead to a serious consequences because there are sensitive data being stored in the system.
All right. So let's actually, since you've already pointed out something that a lot of people, I think, can relate to as well, because there is more awareness and concern about how our data is being used. Even at a consumer level, we use so many, we sign up and register for so many users online and on our apps. So when we talk about privacy and security, in what kinds of settings would you see these issues perhaps coming up being a problem? And how would that compromise me and my well-being?
All right. So let's talk about, let's say, your medical record, right? Or your recording of your telemedicine consultation. And you will have things like your X-ray and sensitive things like maybe your HIV results or your religious belief or sexual practice is being stored there. People might feel that, you know, what can it do is just text and pictures. You know, it's not that you are going to do harm, physical harm, but it can lead to discrimination, loss of work. Those are the thing that people fail to see because it's like not physical. There will be psychological harm. People can get depressed. And basically, people can get certain information, certain demographic, and can use that information to promote something or, you know, some, and then to blackmail. So those are the things that people fail to see. Because advantage is very, very clear, right? Is that breach of security and breach of privacy and confidentiality that's being missed because it's just data. What can data mean? What can harm can it done? Can it do? Yeah.
So let's say with a telemedicine platform, where exactly is my data being stored and who would have access to it in order to exploit it, you know, in those extreme circumstances that you described?
Yeah, I would like to add something on what you actually mentioned on the data security. So for this, I think we have to make some distinction whether we are talking about data shared by the individuals, because nowadays people share a lot of data through their own will because they register with some apps and then they share certain data, they monitor their vital signs. And all these vital signs will be recorded in a third-party server. And this is actually beyond the control of the healthcare providers, right? Because this is data shared by the individuals. The other piece of data is data captured in the healthcare setting. We are talking about data being so-called uploaded or being keyed in the healthcare setting. Like if a patient comes to my hospital, we will write down their findings, for instance, like that symptoms, signs, investigation result, and then we'll prescribe the drugs. And also we order some investigations. And all this data will be captured or stored in the institution server. So of course, it is quite different because at one hand, you are storing your data in a third-party server. On the other hand, the data, like in electronic medical record, it is stored in the hospital. Then, of course, in hospital, we'll make sure that we'll put in place all the necessary security steps to prevent or reduce the breach of the data leakage or the hacking by the prying eyes or the unwanted, actually, the hackers.
We'll come back and look at how we can protect ourselves, whether it's in the case of using digital health apps or telemedicine platforms. I'm speaking to Associate Professor Dr. Julia Patrick Engkasan and Associate Professor Dr. Pang Yong Kek from the Faculty of Medicine, University of Malaya. We're discussing the advent of digital health technologies and the ethical issues that are involved. Stay tuned to Health and Living on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Health and Living with me, T. Shao-Ik. I'm speaking to Associate Professor Dr. Julia Patrick Engkasan and Associate Professor Dr. Pang Yong Kek. They're from the Faculty of Medicine, University of Malaya. It's the fifth episode of our Health Ethics mini-series. And today we're discussing the ethics of providing and using digital healthcare technologies. So earlier we talked about the inherent risks related to confidentiality and privacy of an individual's information, which gives us an idea of what we could potentially be opening ourselves up to when we do use these digital platforms, which are becoming more common today. Now, what do we do about it though? Because I'm leaving my security in the hands of either the third-party developer of a health app, or it could be the healthcare provider providing the telemedicine platform that I'm using. So how do I know what security safeguards are actually in place?
Okay, so if you are talking about the individual data, so maybe we have to separate the discussion into two portions. One is the individual data sharing. So that is beyond the healthcare provider's reach. I think the more data that we share online, the more people will actually come to know about us. So I think it's actually the two-edged sword. It could be actually beneficial. It could also be harmful. If you think that the data that you are going to share, you do not want many people to see, I think try to minimize the sharing. If you are going to, you are trying to reduce your information being accessed by third party, try not to register with apps that is not credible. So if you have any suspicion that the app is not a credible app, I think you should also refrain yourself from sharing any information through this app. And of course, anything that is actually shared online, nothing is actually absolutely secure, because then you have to rely on the third party to secure your data. And how secure your data is dependent on many, many factors. And one of them is how the third party secure your data, whether they have put in place certain security measure to prevent people from accessing their website, from hacking into their website. So all these are quite complicated. But then I think one key here is if you want to reduce your risk, I think you have to minimize sharing. And if you have to share, then you have to make sure that the app is credible and to make sure that you read through all their confidentiality data, how they actually store the data, how they share their data. I mean, many of us just click yes to everything and without going through the details. I think we really have to be mindful of this possibility. So especially the more sensitive data. If you think that the data is not that sensitive, you have to think of, yeah, you may want to, if you were to share, then if in the event of actually data breach, if the data is considered not so sensitive, then by all means, you may actually do it. But if you think that if this data is leaked and it has a very great impact on yourself and you may want to refrain from sharing this data online.
What kind of data should we deem as safe enough to share, and what should be a complete no-no?
Okay, it's probably actually up to the individual as well. Certain people consider certain data as very sensitive, and certain individual think that it's actually less sensitive. But I assume that anything that is revealing your medical illness, I think to me, it should be considered as sensitive, meaning that you do not want people to know what kind of illness you are having. Although it could be just some common chronic sickness like hypertension, diabetes, and all this. But this is your individual data. You may not want other people to know about this, right? Because it has certain percussion, let's say for people who are still working, and when they apply for a certain job, employer may come to know that they have certain significant medical illness and they may decide not to employ this individual. So we may think that it's not actually important, but at certain time it may become important. when it comes to certain things in life, or some more, even more sensitive data, like people have like HIV infection, have a sexually transmitted disease, or some people have like cancer and they do not want people to know, or even transmissible disease like TB or some other infectious diseases. So this will become even more sensitive.
So I just want to let people know, consumers know, or patients know that it is always an option, right? For example, whether you want to do telemedicine or not, it is always an option. So that is you have to know that it's your right. You know, you can decide whether you want to join or not to join the telemedicine. So that is very important for all people to know.
All right. So, you know, earlier Dr. Pang was talking about, you know, how you can identify what safeguards are in place or, you know, make better decisions about sharing your personal data on an individual basis to a third party platform or an app. But what about the telemedicine scenario where it's a hospital and the health or the healthcare provider that is, you know, actually entering and holding on to that data? How are patients protected in those situations?
All right. So in telemedicine, it's about like me and you now. I'm consulting you on a particular situation. For example, I want to tell your blood result and so on, right? So it is the healthcare provider responsibility to make sure that, you know, that their server or where they keep their data are backup. You know, I know that they have, sometimes they have two or three layers of backup system, yeah, just in case the breach of security. Number two is that restricted access, right? When you do telemedicine, for example, not everybody can do it. Only those who have undergone some competency training are able to do this telemedicine consultation. And also the security of where the consultation is being done, what hardware, which hardware, and then also, again, restricted access. So that is our one thing that the healthcare provider or the institution must have. And they also must have that, you know, maybe the committee, they look into what happened if somebody breached the confidentiality or had some wrongdoing when they do some medical consultation. And like I said just now, that we have to take patient consent before we can do telemedicine with a particular patient. So, and patient can, you can ask what are the security measures put in place. So those are among the security measures that I know that we should put in place.
Yeah, I think things are getting very complex these days because for general public, especially for those who are not very tech savvy, they may not be able to comprehend, even if it is written in black and white, they may not be able to assess the risks actually very much. For instance, taking the telemedicine as an example, first of all, we need to know when we are communicating online, right? So that means there is a connection between individual A and B. And the data need to be stored. Usually it's recorded in a server. Then we have to ask ourselves, when this telemedicine is performed, where is the data going to be stored? Some actually so-called service provider, they provide their own platform. Okay, and then obviously the data is going to store in their server. So things will be a lot easier to assess because it's only another party. But if the telemedicine is made or performed through a third-party platform, for instance, if you do it with Zoom, with Microsoft Teams, with Google Meet, we have to understand that the data may not be stored in the other party server. It will be stored in another party server. So like Google Meet will be in a Google server, Zoom will be Zoom server, Microsoft Teams will be in Microsoft server. And where exactly is the server, we do not know. So they can virtually store the information anywhere. So the more parties involved, I think the possibility of the data breach will be higher. Okay, that's one in terms of data storage. The other thing to look at is how the data is being transmitted online, whether the data is transmitted in an encrypted format or without any encryption. So sometimes the data breach is not actually happening at the server level. It is happening while actually the communication is taking place. Someone is intercepting the transmission. For instance, especially if you are doing it through Wi-Fi, for instance, before your data reach the server of the third party, another party can actually listen to your conversation and record the conversation without you and the service provider knowing it. So it's very complex. So it's not that easy to tell people how to secure your data. We need to have some basic understanding of how data is being stored, who is the provider, and how the provider actually ensure that your data is secure. And I think a lot of people are still not very well-versed with terms like encryption. So unless we understand some of these basic concepts, we might not be able to evaluate the risk very well.
I think a big problem is that as consumers, we tend to think it's someone else's responsibility. It's someone else's problem. I have some faith and hope that somebody out there is protecting me. But, I'll come back to that a little bit later, as in whose responsibility is it within this healthcare ecosystem? But before we get to that, there are still some other ethical issues that I'd like to pick up from. Dr. Julia, we could move on to relating to the accuracy, the veracity, or the validity of, you know, the usage of this digital tech. So, for instance, the kinds of wearables that a lot of consumers use that's tracking some form of health indicators, or even at the most sophisticated extreme is artificial intelligence, which is supposed to aid in diagnostics. You know, within that spectrum, what are the ethical issues related to the accuracy of the information that is provided in terms of the healthcare of the patient?
So it is on the healthcare provider or the researcher itself that provide the data. So how sure are we the data is valid? It's based on how well the research is done. And it is one of the important thing on this data accuracy. The ethical thing is that it can lead to a lot of misdiagnosis, maybe, yeah? Because right now, it's not much of an issue because we still have doctor's consultation. AI has not really taken over healthcare consultation. So they still need to consult us on terms of how accurate is this AI. But it is our responsibility, researcher responsibility, developer responsibility to make sure that correct data are being fed to this machine and come up with this diagnostic or algorithm. And you really have to know where the information comes from. That is when you need to know the origin of this AI. And then if the hospital, for example, endorse this AI. So as a consumer, I don't think I will be able to know how accurate is the data. But I do hope that when it's endorsed by a certain hospital that it is accurate. But I think PROPA might have something to add on this.
Yeah, I would like to add a few important points when people are sending information using wearables. So when we talk about wearables, I think the issue number one that we need to ask ourselves is like what Julia has pointed out just now. When you send your information, let's say you capture certain data, right? The variables are capturing, let's say, your blood pressure or your temperature or your pulse rate or your ECG or your oxygen saturation in your blood. The question number one that we need to ask, apart from actually the security issue, is how accurate is this data is being measured, okay? That will actually boils down to the device that you're using, whether it has been validated. I think a lot of these consumer items, they are not so strict in terms of, because in medical devices, usually we need to get approval from the relevant authority in order to say that this device has been tested and is fit to be used in the clinical practice. So the standard usually is quite high. It's very different from the consumer items, whereby the same standards are not being applied to them. So meaning that the measurement that you obtain from the variables may not be the same as what we measure in the hospital. That is actually a very important issue that until recently we have not been actually examining, partly because most of these measurements are done in the healthcare setting, whether it is in the clinic or it is in the hospital, whereby only well-validated or approved products or devices are being used in these settings. So now consumers are purchasing some of these products to be used at home or in the community. But we know that these variables, they are not actually subjected to the same testing. And hence, this actually become an issue. If we are going to capture this data, the question that we like to ask ourselves is, how reliable is this data? Is it comparable to the data that we actually measure in the hospital? And there's no good solution at the moment because the same standard has not been applied to the consumer products. The healthcare providers need to know how to interpret this data, whether it is coming from the variables or the validated device. My postulation is that the variables will become part and parcel of our life, part of the digital health. So the question is how to make it usable. I won't say reliable, usable for us. I think we have to educate the consumer. At the same time, we have to educate the healthcare providers how to interpret this data.
So I think where does regulation come in to protect consumers?
I doubt that the government is going to enact any law to say that consumer products, you need to go through the stringent validation testing, like the medical devices. Why it is not possible to do it? Because if you were to apply the same rules or requirements, the consumer products will become extremely expensive. Just give you one example, the blood pressure measuring device that the consumer use at home usually is around 100 over to a few hundred ringgit. That is considered as a normal price. Whereas the medical devices are used for the same purpose to measure the blood pressure in the hospital, usually range from a few thousands to more than 10,000s. So you can see that the price difference is huge, partly because it has been well-validated, the build quality is different, and from time to time, as a requirement by the law, we need to calibrate the machine at least once a year, if not more frequent, to make sure that the machine remains quite accurate. So I doubt that any regulation will be enacted by the government to set the same standard for the consumer devices.
Mm.
That will be beyond the reach of most consumers.
Mm.
So while we may want to achieve the higher standard, but then it will actually make the products inaccessible in terms of prices for the consumers.
So at this point, it's for consumers to be aware of
the pitfalls,
limitations you mentioned, and to know how exactly we want to use it, what kinds of expectations we should have. Yes. But I'm glad you brought up cost, because even at, say, a few hundred ringgit for a blood pressure monitor, which is, I think, the most entry-level kind of a gadget that we have, or the more sophisticated wearables, going on to as more digital technology is introduced into healthcare, where we could potentially see the cost of healthcare increasing. And cost is, of course, a big factor in when it comes to access. So let's come back and talk a little bit more about equity, which is also an ethical issue that needs to be considered as we talk about expanding the use of digital health technologies and platforms, and the gap that it could create between those who have access and those who don't. I'm speaking to Associate Professor Dr. Julia Patrick Angkasan and Associate Professor Dr. Pang Yong Kek from the Faculty of Medicine, University of Malaya. Do keep it right here on Health and Living, BFM 89.9. Welcome back to the show with me, T. Xiao Yik. It's our Health and Living segment. I'm speaking to Associate Professor Dr. Julia Patrick Angkasan and Associate Professor Dr. Pang Yong Kek from the Faculty of Medicine, University of Malaya. We're discussing ethical issues when it comes to the expanding inevitable use of digital healthcare as it becomes more prevalent today. Some of the issues we've discussed, including privacy and confidentiality, how to protect individuals from misuse of their personal data, also accountability in the decisions that are made using these digital technologies. Now, Dr. Julia, what kinds of ethical issues do you see in terms of access to digital tech in healthcare?
Right. When it comes to access, I mean, it's about health equity. Can everybody benefit from this technology? For example, just talk about telemedicine. Telemedicine is supposed to make it easier for you to consult your doctor, meaning that you don't have to come to the hospital physically. So you save a lot of things on, for example, time, cost of traveling. And we all know that, you know, access is a problem when it involves technology. We can see that in this teaching learning from home now, right? Even though if you look into the report in one of the websites, Statistica, that in 2021, 88% of Malaysians own a smartphone. But this is only one section of access. One, what is offered hardware, right? Second is connectivity. The rural area, we have no connectivity. Number three is digital literacy. You know, a lot of people have smartphone just to be able to talk with their family through WhatsApp, video call, that's it. But to understand, you know, digital health, I mean, what is the display of information and what telemedicine involves is another level. And we know that, you know, the disadvantaged, low socioeconomic, those who are elderly, they will not benefit probably from this telemedicine, for example. And those are the people who should have access to this because it is more difficult, more risky, for example, from people from the rural area, it's more costly for them to come to the hospital compared to those in the city. But those are the people who are most likely unable to access this technology or this advancement in healthcare. So it is a problem. So when you implement it, you have to look into all these other accounts to make sure that every layer of society benefit from this technology or new paradigm of healthcare.
So digital literacy is such an enticing phrase, but you know, at the end of the day, it just comes down to knowing what you're doing in the digital space, isn't it? Understanding what you're signing up for, who's like all the things that you've talked about that Dr. Pang raised about encryption, you know, where is the server where your data is being stored? Nothing that we question on a daily basis when we use everything from social media to any of these apps. We don't question or think to read the fine print on any of these. I guess I just want to revisit the point I made earlier, which was we'll leave it to somebody else to take care of it. But how do we reframe this thinking? How do we make sure that everyone in this space plays his or her own responsibility?
So I suppose that you have to engage every stakeholders who are involved in either as a developer, designer, end users when you want to implement something. I know that it is not very common here, but you have to take into or bring people with an ethical perspective early when you want to develop a survey, let's say telemedicine. Because we on our own, we probably only see our areas, but you know, ethics is such a, you need to have somebody who really knows how to look into the ethical problem. Because ours is normally very, very segmented. And I think the what I have, I know that you make sure that you involve all the stakeholders so that the engineers, the data management people, the healthcare provider, as well as the consumer themselves have to be involved in designing, developing, and implementation of any digital healthcare.
Do you see this happening at all, Dr. Julia?
Dr. Pan, I know that there's a lot of discussion, when, especially with COVID, right? Before that, it was quite slow, but with COVID, there's a lot of paper and discussion about how it should be done in the right manner, right? And ethical issue is quite complex, right? And we are not sure, but we are supposed to have this technology ethical committee who can help with making sure that what we take proactive measures to protect the possible ethical breach, as well as to work out on how to monitor, you know, and what happened if somebody breached it.
Actually, I just would like to reiterate what Julia has mentioned just now. In this discussion, we know that actually optimizing the database and making sure that data is secure and how to secure the data, how to make it confidential, is not an easy task. But all the stakeholders, okay, consumer, what role they have to play in order to improve the data security. Then the other part that we have to ask is the service provider. Service provider may not be the healthcare providers. Service provider could be actually the technology team, okay? They have to make the platform not only easy and convenient to use, and affordable, but also be more secure. And then, of course, the healthcare providers, especially the bigger institution, how they optimize their platform, make it less complicated for their patients, which is actually the so-called the consumer, to use digital products in order to make sure that even without too much actually knowledge about the technical aspect of this, the product is safer than before, and yet at the same time it's easy to use. So I think all of us as a stakeholders in this healthcare must try to improve ourselves. I believe that over time we will actually achieve this target, or at least closer to the target. Meanwhile, I think for the time being, a lot of efforts still need to be put in to make sure that we are moving closer to the target. I think considerable progress has been made over the years. And I think the platform, hospital server, or even the third-party apps now are getting more and more secure. So with the added efforts by the individual, I think we could be moving closer to targets that all of us envisage.
Mm. And you know, the technology will just race straight ahead, isn't it? We are always playing catch up.
Yes.
Dr. Julia, do you think healthcare professionals themselves are sort of able to race alongside, right? What have you observed in terms of what they are struggling, in order to uphold ethical care, but also make use of the technology that's available?
Well, I think that we are not ready yet. I mean, in the matter that it's not like, okay, we start it tomorrow. No, there need to be competency training or competency-based credentialing. It's not something that is open for everybody, I think. You know, it's open only for those who have undergone some form of training and certification. Even as me as a consultant, you know, it's not something that is already in me, you know, when it comes to this digital thing, yeah, because we are always trigger happy, right? And for me, I need to read and read and read, then I gain the knowledge. So I think that we need to be trained. We need to have strict rules, regulation, who can and who cannot do, right? Because it is not in us yet. That's what I feel, yeah.
Do you have a final message when it comes to encouraging people, including consumers, as well as healthcare providers, to make sure that digital tech serves us best rather than exploiting our weaknesses?
There must be greater awareness on the danger of, you know, of data, breach of data and security. And this is what I think has been quite obvious nowadays. For me, is that keep yourself updated, but it's not as easy as that three-word sentence.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
Prof. Yeah, I agree. It's not something that we can sum up quite easily. As we discussed, and as you we have seen actually is quite a complex issue. But my feeling is that while I think the technology is already there, we can't avoid not using the technology. Mm. But message number one is that technology is getting more and more important and encroaching actually much closer to us in a way we have to embrace it. Otherwise, we will be left behind. But at the same time, we still have to make sure that we are not overexposing ourselves. And if we are not sure what we need to share online, try to minimize sharing. I think many of us have picked up here and there and become more familiar with the technology. And once we are more familiar, we also become more comfortable on using the technology. And many of us have actually come to know what we should share and what we shouldn't share online. What is actually the future that is waiting for us? How we can actually capitalize on this future mm-hmm. and use it wisely. At the same time, yet minimize our risk of exposing ourselves to the unwanted eyes.
And I think we are so enamored sometimes by what technology can offer us that we forget there are risks. So in the same way that we are brought up and conditioned to look out for dangers when we cross the road or you know, when kids go out on their own, I guess we have to have that same mindset about venturing into the digital space as well. There are risks out there, just like any other kind of environment. And we need to know what those risks are so that we can protect ourselves. Thank you so much for your time today. I've been speaking to Associate Professor Dr. Julia Patrick Engkasan from the Department of Rehabilitation Medicine in University of Malaya and Associate Professor Dr. Pang Yong Kek from the Department of Medicine, University of Malaya. You've been listening to Health and Living on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.